Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kidman and Lisa Whiston, self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Hi friends, it's Lisa here from Sustainable You Pod. And this episode, you have me flying solo. I am alone in my wardrobe without Jackie. And the main reason, I suppose, is because we are busy. Busy mums that have a lot on our plate. And we haven't had a chance to get together to record some stuff for our podcast. The reason why that we've both been quite busy, one of the reasons, is because I got a job. I'm now working part-time 3 days a week for Climate for Change. Some of you guys may know that I used to volunteer as a facilitator with Climate for Change. They're a grassroots, not-for-profit organisation that aims to generate a momentum in for the social awareness of climate change and the social movement for climate change action. So they have an awesome conversation program. I've kind of discussed them a little bit in a previous podcast. If you want to find out any more about them, please let me know. But I get to go into their offices and help with the administration of their program, which is awesome. It gives me purpose in not only just having a job other than working for myself and being a mum, but it kind of really ties in well with my values at the moment too. So it's been fantastic. One of the things that we are promoting to our supporters and that I think Jackie and I from Sustainable You Pod also would like to promote, that as of today, there's just under 3 weeks to go until the 20th of September. And on that day, there's going to be a global climate strike that's led by the student movement. So the School Strike for Climate movement has organised a couple of student strikes in the past year, 6 months. And there's a big one now. It's gone global and they're inviting everyone to come and support them. I think in Melbourne, in the one in March, there were over 40,000 people there. So they're hoping to blow that out of the water on the 20th of September and get as many people down there to send a message to our politicians that we need to move very quickly to renewable energy. We need to move away from coal, no new coal projects. And if you want any more information, you can jump onto climateforchange.org.au. There's some links there onto our Facebook page. And also you can go to the School Strike for Climate website, and we'll post some links in our show notes for you guys. The other thing that we would love you to go and do is, if you haven't already seen it, go and see the 2040 movie. If you go to whatsyour2040.com, you will find screenings that are happening in your community. It's kind of gone off the mainstream cinemas, but people and groups are holding screenings that you can go and attend. They're all over the place, and this film is so relevant and so good for so many different groups of people. I think that's what I love the most about it. It's that it is aimed at everyone. So if you are somebody who hasn't really considered what's happening with our climate, and you're kind of overwhelmed by all the negative press about it, and you want to go and see something that will help explain all the science in very simple terms and is very solutions focused, go and see it. If you are a longtime climate warrior, climate activist, someone who cares, and you're feeling a little bit disheartened and a bit of climate grief, it's also fantastic for you because it shows you what can be done and the small changes that just need to happen in society to kind of get this going. There's so much talk about the environment and sustainability and climate action at the moment that I feel like we're almost at a tipping point where pretty soon it's all just going to happen, whether the politicians like it or not. There's definitely a global movement happening. And the 2040 film is a fantastic way to kind of insert yourself back into doing something about it. Jackie and I were asked by Suburban Sandcastles, thank you, Bridget, to be on a panel after the screening of the film last week. So we had a Q&A with, it was us and Tim from Be Alternative, who are a sustainability consultation little business. They focus on the festivals movement and also work with corporations, and hopefully they're going to get into schools too. So Tim was really awesome. You'll hear from Tim. And so what we thought we might do is play you the Q&A section that the audience had for us after seeing the film. A few interesting themes came out of it. If you've seen the film, then maybe some of the questions that our audience members asked will be ones that you've thought of. And if you haven't seen the film yet, then I'm sure you'll be able to still learn something new by listening. So I think that's everything that I wanted to tell you. I'm going to cut through to the audio now. And I know that it's not ideal. It's a little bit hard to record audience members when they didn't have microphones. So hopefully it's at a good level and you guys can hear everything. Please give us feedback if the audio is no good. We definitely want to hear it so we can improve. And I will come back to you after.
$1 billion a year to stop us reducing our emissions was pretty challenging to hear. Not surprising, but pretty challenging. I'd love to invite our panel down. So we've got Tim from The Alternative. We are an environmental education group. We're doing lots of things. Most recently, you guys were up at Splendor in the Grass, weren't you? Helping out festival goers. So I'll get you to talk a little bit about your work in just a minute. And we'll also invite Jackie and Lisa from the Sustainable You podcast. We do lots of work on educating what we can do in our home. So Jackie explained to me that she doesn't send anything to landfill, which I thought was pretty impressive. Maybe there's some more of you in the audience who are also there. I'm not. I do still send things to landfill. I have three children, so that will do it. But I'm looking forward to hearing some of your tips too. So Tim, we might head over to you first on what we're all about and what stood out for you in the film about where we could go.
Thanks very much. Great to see such a good turnout tonight. It's that was the first time I've seen that film, and yeah, that blew me away. There were so many questions I originally had, but they all kind of got answered for me, which was pretty amazing. I'm Tim from Be Alternative. Basically, we're a grassroots environmental educational consultancy group, you could say. We work in a few sectors. One is the festival space, so that's all about reducing waste, reducing landfill, increasing reusables, increasing composting, and therefore you can get that transition in cost as well. You can bring those costs down that's associated with sending all that waste to landfill, because we do know at the moment, we've seen all those viral videos, festivals, it's just one kind of big fun time, and it's fair enough, we get lost in a big fun time, which we're all very right to do so, but the waste that's created with that does have a big environmental impact afterwards. So that's one space we work within. The next space is within the school space, and that's trying to transition that model that we have in the festival space at the moment within schools. So that's educating all the students to become more sustainable within their own little environment, what we can do to reduce waste, change everything in the canteen, so it's pretty much kind of, so we can get that closed loop cycle going essentially within schools. And we help support all of this by having an online shop as well, so that's eco-friendly, environmentally sustainable, reusable products. So that's us in a nutshell, and I'll hand over the microphone.
Hi everyone, I'm Jackie, this is Lisa, just in case you get confused. So we started a podcast this year called Sustainable You, and the concept behind it was that I was looking for ways to not feel so overwhelmed in my day-to-day kind of things that I do in my home, and how I could take that step a little bit further and make a better impact on the environment. We already sort of run our house on solar, tank water, you know, sort of things like that. But seeing sort of rubbish going out, you know, weekly, and the waste that we had, you know, sort of made me think that there has to be a better way. So I started to make some changes just sort of personally. And then by sharing that, I'd had a lot of sort of people ask me questions on how are you doing this, what are you doing? So the concept behind the podcast was to create a platform for people to be able to hear what it is that we are doing. I'm doing something a little bit different to what Lisa is doing, and she's also, you know, we're still on a very big journey to be able to create some big change. But I have two chickens, Lisa has six or something like that. I'm a bit jealous about that. And so most of our waste goes to that. And I'm very conscious about the stuff that I purchase. So in terms of any plastic things, most of the stuff, I buy a lot of secondhand. So, you know, trying to just recreate, not having to recreate lots and lots of waste around that. So the podcast is very, it's just targeted at the average person that wants to sort of make some day-to-day changes, and it can be implemented into your home or your workplace as well. Lisa also works for an organisation, Climate for Change, that maybe you want to talk about that.
Sure. Hi guys. I agree with all of what Jackie just said, but I also came to the podcast from a different direction. I've been doing some work with Climate for Change, who are a not-for-profit who aim to increase the conversations around climate change amongst everyday Australian people. And one of the themes out of the conversations that we run is that kind of need for action, and action across all different levels, as individuals, as community members, as consumers, and as citizens. And so the podcast was another really good way to get out that message of just do that one thing, start taking some action, and then you'll very quickly learn that more action will soon follow.
It's really clear that it's almost like a tipping point thing we've got going on. I don't know who's read Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, but you can see even now the amount of organics and kind of whole foods that are so easily accessible in supermarkets that, you know, you had to go to a niche store 5 or 6 years ago to get. I mean, there seems to be an evolution of consciousness that's making this, you know, all the more mainstream, these choices, but there does still seem to be at a government level, you know, huge gripping onto the status quo. Tim, with the work that you do, because you also do work with corporates, how much do you see them as setting the tone for, you know, the rest of society? Versus the grassroots bottom-up stuff, which ultimately pushes, you know, the big supermarkets to listen to their communities. What do you sort of see that balance looking like?
Yeah, sure, great question. And I think, as easy as it is to visualise as well, it should be a 50-50 balance. Like at the moment, we're working with quite a large corporate in the city, and I went into this big meeting, you know, with one of those ones you think about in the movies with the big long oval table, which everyone sits around, and you sit at the end, they all look at you. It was really quite intimidating. But basically, those corporates weren't the type of people I first imagined them to be, because I grew up in, I guess, this little bubble down on Phillip Island. And they're all like, this is awesome, all this stuff you guys are doing, we want to adopt it all. So we're like, hell yeah. But there are other things they have to consider. and take into their business operation, because at the end of the day, to keep business thriving, as we all know, money is a big, big factor. So I think the little changes from the big corporates is going to have a huge impact, as well as what we can do from the bottom up. Like the two ladies, or the two experts here, I should say, their favourite saying they told me before in the common room out there was, we don't need everyone doing a lot. I mean, sorry, we don't need a few people doing a lot. We need everyone doing something. So, you know, whether it's reducing your meat consumption from 5 times a week to twice a week, or whether it's, you know, building a compost in your garden, those little things, I think, we don't think are going to have a big impact now, but it's just going to take a few of those brave members to start doing it. And once we can find that balance between the corporates, who essentially do drive the government, and the grassroots organisations, that's when I think, yeah, the real impact will kick in.
This film's got me appreciating my chickens a bit more, actually. I've been neglecting them for a while. One of them's called Bocky, for obvious reasons. You know how chickens go, bok, bok. That was my 6-year-old's name for the chicken. Anyway, who's got some questions for our panel? Otherwise, I can just keep asking them. What maybe popped up for you in the film that you're not so sure about, or you're, no, just, yeah?
Why is there more discussion about not eating animals or animal products, or animals not being utilised, you know, for clothing and other household items, as well as animal products being used in cosmetics and so forth, considering that animal, agriculture is approximately 30% of greenhouse gas emissions in globally?
Yeah. The film touched on that briefly, didn't it, in terms of how some places we're using methane, for example. I think it was Stockholm or something, that's where it was recycling that. But I think, I mean, I'd love to hear maybe, or you ladies, to talk about the growing rise. I think veganism as a movement is exploding now because of more and more awareness around the impact of animal products on the environment. Do you have anything to say about that, Tim?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's quite a touchy discussion, because it does affect, I guess, a lot of livelihoods. We have a lot of farmers, you know, doing all these things to maintain the livelihood, and it's like putting them out of business, which we touched on in the movie, is something we've really got to be careful of. But at the same time, those farming practices we know now are the cause of a lot of environmental impact. We have the land clearing to start, which is habitat destruction. We then fill the land with all these beings who create methane and greenhouse gases. And there's all these factors we've got to consider, and there are lots of movements that are coming out now which are kind of honing in on these issues a lot more. I think the name of a couple of movies have come out.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think this is where a lot of the big discussion is happening in these movies, but at the end of the day, there's that fine balance between, I guess, maintaining, you know, what we've built already, and trying to kind of subsidise our way out of these issues we've built ourselves into at the same time. Do you guys have anything to touch on that?
The only thing that I wanted to add to that is that this is the third time I've actually seen the 2040 movie, and the first time I saw it, I was lucky enough that Damon was there afterwards to do a Q&A. And then the last week I saw it, there was a biologist whose husband consulted on the film, so she had a lot of information about the making of the film itself. So from what I've observed, I know that the original cut of the movie was over 3 hours long, and he had investigated a lot to do with that topic, as well as many others, but it just couldn't make it palatable for mainstream people to come and watch. He had to cut it somewhere. So I think he has aimed to use some of the information that he learned and put together for the original cut in future productions. I know there were questions last week about the use of public transport as well. It hasn't really been touched on in terms of, it went straight to electric autonomous vehicles. So hopefully there will be more that Damon will put out, and that there'll be other stuff about that too. But we know the issue is incredibly complex, and there's a lot of facets to discuss.
I just wanted to sort of add a little bit to that, is around, I guess, we as the consumer play a big role. So, we need to be the ones, you know, like the movie kind of explains that we can't be, we can't wait around for governments to step in and do that sort of stuff. So, you know, we need to be the ones that, you know, talk about why we're reducing our meat consumption. You know, having a conversation with someone, not telling them that they have to reduce it, or, you know, like bringing people in as part of the conversation is actually better than, you know, than that sort of the dominance of you can't do this anymore. You know, it just gets, you know, that's what I've just found, like it just gets people just to kind of start thinking about stuff. You know, all of a sudden someone's, you know, not buying something brand new anymore, you know, isn't consuming as much meat, is really being conscious about where they're purchasing stuff from. You know, if you're someone that purchases meat from Woolworths, Aldi or Coles, none of those farms are from regenerative farmers. There's only about 10% of regenerative farmers in Australia. So, you know, we need to start educating ourselves about what it is that we're the ones bringing it into our lives and into our homes. And that's something that I've just made a very, very big conscious sort of switch, is that I need to know, you know, where it's come from. I ask questions. I'm part of Parky Grocer and Eden Grocer, so I know that they are going out to these farms and that, you know, I'm actually getting to know where my food is coming from, and I think we've lost that disconnect. We've lost the disconnect with our food, with our animals, and also with each other, you know. So that's what I sort of have loved about the changes that I've made, is I've also created a community, and our podcast has also created a community of people, you know, that, which is very much what you do too, Bridge. But, you know, people drop their scraps over to me to feed the chickens, and, you know, I get to meet, you know, people that I wouldn't normally meet, or talk to people I wouldn't normally meet. And I think that's really important, that we start to, you know, build community around that stuff, and then we're educating each other. And we've got resources to go and say, where do you get your meat from? Or where did you get that, you know, product? How did you do that?
Yeah. Anyone else? Yes.
As far as composting goes, we don't have a compost bin at our house. And I know with more apart living these days as well, less people probably have compost bins these days. I feel like I was on holiday somewhere a few years ago, and the council at the place that we stayed actually had like a bin specifically for composting. Do you guys know much about how easy that is for councils to introduce, or whether there is one that I just don't know about around here?
Do you live in the City of Kingston?
I do.
Yeah. So City of Bayside have just released a home composting. They've just released that the last sort of 4 weeks. City of Kingston have got theirs coming out. I think it's early next year. It was meant to actually, I did have inside information that it was meant to come out in October, but for whatever reason, it's not. So you get basically a special bin that you then put out, and so particularly if you're in an apartment, there's another big bin. So you get a little like composting bucket, and then you can put it into a bigger bin, and then the council will come and collect that as part of the you know, their food waste and using that. But in the meantime, I've got two hungry chickens at home that need food. But there is a website called Share Waste that you can look on and look at your area. Knock on, you know, also, again, knock on your neighbour's door or someone's door and saying, do you know anyone that has a compost around here? Because I've got heaps of scraps, I'd love to donate, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Is there somewhere where you can find out that information without spending like hours trawling? That's what I found really overwhelming. Where do you get
this
information from? Yeah.
So is that for meat in particular?
Okay, yeah, that can start, yeah.
Or are you?
Yeah, no meat
for
the
beer
could start.
Well, I'm lucky, I live in Parkdale, but and I could think of three butchers off the top of my head that are in like a really close range here. So I don't actually, I think you have to start talking to your butcher.
Yeah.
You know, stop talking to, not, if you, most butchers don't use the same, like Woolworths and those supermarkets are big, you know, that's big corporate.
Mm.
You know, so my kind of rule of thumb is just to steer clear of them. And you probably, but asking the question as well about where you're getting your produce from. Yeah. If you're local, I can tell you where they are. Okay, so there's Chow Chow Chow, just up the road here. And there's also, so they've got one in Parkdale and one in Hyatt. And then there's also one at Thrift Park called Scotch and Fillet. You can also take your own containers there and they will fill them up for you. They don't put stuff into plastic bags. And they also do, like, you can refill things like olive oil and that sort of stuff. You can take your own containers there too.
There's also obviously farmers markets. There's Farmer Dan who frequents some of the markets further down. They also have online delivery. He's basically organic but not. We've had him here to speak before and he's really great. But yeah, I know what you mean. It can feel overwhelming. I think so much of us when we're busy, we just reach for convenience, which is swinging past the supermarket, right? So sometimes we can nail this stuff and sometimes they fall off the wagon and have to get back on. And I think it's just this film and these conversations are a good reminder about where we can tweak things and make changes that are achievable. We got any other questions? Just yet?
I'm Avril from We Are One World. Taking this, you're talking about locally, but taking it more globally, I'd like to know how you're actually targeting the corporates and what are they seeing as incentives? Because really, when you look at it, a lot of what's come out of the necessity, like you look at what the solar in Bangladesh and places like that, we found that the corporates overseas, where there is a necessity like Bangladesh, where we've gone over there, they're much more open. If you've got the alternatives and you're looking at creating a better world for everyone, they welcome you with open arms, whereas if you're speaking to corporates in Melbourne, it's, they're looking at their bottom line, there's just not incentive for
them. So it's the people who are backed into a corner and have no choice of welcoming it, whereas because we still in Melbourne aren't really that impacted.
Yeah. And our girls can go to school here.
Yeah.
So, they said one of the key things was to educate the girls. And we do take it for granted that all our girls will go to school and be educated here and get to the end of schooling. I'm just wondering, are you hitting lots of corporates with this, or have you just got one big company that's doing it as a bit of a feel-good exercise?
Yeah, cool. I found out I looked at Sweden at the end there, and I was like, wow, wouldn't that be an amazing country you're living in? I should know Australia. Getting onto the corporates, we've found, or personally I've found, and even as a company, we've found that, yes, it does come down to the bottom dollar. So we can create these innovative strategies that's going to save them money and do good for the environment at the same time. That's what's going to get you in there straight away. I can give you one example. So we're working with Collins Square at the moment, which is huge. They're in the city, big corporate. And basically, one little thing we've changed is they were producing over a ton of paper towel waste today that was going to landfill, which is quite a bit. And basically now, so we've come in, rearranged their bin structure, how it all operates out the back, what's coming out of the shops within, and then sending it off to get it composted. It was being recycled, but we found that paper towel is not very good to be recycled. There's lots of things just to do with the structure of it and its ability to go back into another structural product. So basically now they're saving a ton of money just by doing, I guess, tweaking this minor thing. You know, we don't even go in there and work 5 days a week. We're checking in once a week with them. We've just set them up at the start and we've trained up their staff to implement this structure and follow it out, which is saving a lot of money and doing something really good for the environment. All this paper towel's not going to landfill, which will sit there and then produce greenhouse gases like a lot of other products. So coming back to the point of your question, it's about finding these strategies where you can do something good and save money. Whereas another example is if we go into a festival, festivals aren't trying to lose money, they're trying to make money. It's quite a hard game to make it in unless you're really established. And basically, landfill, the levies are only going up. It costs money to dump rubbish in landfill, it costs money to transport it there. So basically, if we can reuse a lot and compost a lot, if we can compost on site even better, but the compost tipping fees are a lot less than landfill. So that's another way where we can save a client money and do something that's excellent for the environment.
I find those numbers so interesting. I even noticed EnviroAngels had a whole bunch of numbers on their website. You know, it's really compelling for big businesses when they can see that, oh, this is not just something to make us look good, we can actually save money and do the right thing. It does just require a bit of, you know, commitment and, you know, rethinking things. And I guess that, you know, bringing that down to us as individuals, the same is true. It can feel overwhelming to, you know, change our behaviour, but starting bit by bit, which I think was what you guys cover so well in your podcast. So I'm going to tune in. So I'll include the links to both VL Alternative and you guys in the email follow-up that we send. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question for you, actually. You mentioned you have three children earlier. It's hard to avoid landfill.
Yes.
I totally understand what you mean. I only have one, and I hope to have another one. It does scare me. I have a lot of anxiety around what the world's going to be like in 2040, and it's caused quite a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And what my child will, you know, what kind of world we're keeping in.
Yeah.
So I'll give them a sibling and they'll be
yeah,
able
yeah,
to
yeah,
each other.
Yeah.
But anyway, my question is, what would you say, and this is to all of you guys, what would you say are the top five things we can do when we have children to make sure there is less landfill? Like, I know there's reusable nappies and things like
that.
I do find it very
hard
with babies' things. You're just constantly wrapping it up in a plastic bag.
Yeah. Oh, I don't do that. Just wraps it. It's a really great way you can wrap nappies, which wraps everything.
Yeah, and sometimes I do that when I'm out.
Yeah.
I feel so guilty every time I do it. But it's like, what are the ways we can, are there, you know, electrified grateful options?
Yeah. It's a cost
thing as well.
Totally, and it's also a time thing. Like, you know, I use cloth nappies with my son when I had one child. It's very different having, there's no way I'm spending time washing nappies with my third baby. And you also got to look at the cost of the water and the, you know, all of that as well.
Yeah.
It's not simply as it's, when you work it out, it can be a bit of a zero sum thing.
So I guess I just want to see some progression with that as well.
It's a great question, and that's probably where I was a few years ago, was at that kind of, you know, point of, you know, it's this topic you can quite easily lose hope. I've been to lots of climate change films and kind of walked out and just thought, we are so, you know, stuffed. Like, you know, and it's taken, you know, us, and we've had conversations with people, and Lisa and I have kind of at the times just thought, we couldn't talk to each other, we were just like so down about it. But I think that you just need to take it day by day, and you can't, you know, like, it's like with anything, it's like driving a car or thinking, worried about what's going to happen. You know, we do know that we've got some great stats at the moment, and I think that we know that if we don't do anything, we're going to look back and go, why didn't I do anything, like what she says in the film. You know, and for me, like, I mean, I might have, you know, we might have only made those small changes in our home, but we see how it impacts, you know, the people around us. We see how it impacts our children, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, I'll walk to school with my kids, and they will, without prompting them, they will pick up rubbish. And that just, you know, that just makes my heart sing, and just think, you know, they get it. They get that they play a role in that too. So, you know, and as a parent, you completely worry. Like, I worry all the time. But I think that if anything that I can give any advice for you to leave here is that just think about one change you can make, one thing that you can do tomorrow that's not going to make a huge impact, you know, on or stress you out. And eventually in 5 years' time, you'll look back and kind of go, like, wow, that one thing that I changed was so minimal into comparison to what I'm doing now. You know, you can't just wait for the right moment. You know, you just got to just do it.
And I'm not worried. I would also add that, you know, humans are excellent problem solvers, and the evolution of consciousness means that the people who are coming into the world are going to be able to solve problems. I mean, Buckminster Fuller said in the 70s, pollution is just something we haven't figured out how to use yet. And so often the very things that we are seeing as creating waste or problems, we can harness, as I'm seeing in this film, to create energy. So I really trust that, particularly if we lead the way and set a foundation for our kids, that will become their new normal, and from that they will lift off and create even better solutions. So I think it's too easy to get pulled into the worry, whereas I think we need to galvanise ourselves and trust that it's not a mistake what's happening here, and the nature of, there's always creation obstruction, it's happening all of the time in every moment, it's part of evolution. And for all the people that are trying to save the world, people trying to destroy it, you're not going to get rid of the fossil fuel companies, they're going to be there until there's nothing left. So we can either get angry at them, or we can look for a new way and hold that as a vision. And I think that that's far more empowering than getting stuck on everybody else and what they're not doing. So that's my thoughts. Thank you so much to our beautiful panel for your insights and for everybody else being part of the conversation, guys. Thank you.
So I think we'll leave it there. That was pretty much the end of the night for Jackie and I. We had a blast sitting on that panel. It was daunting, but it was really fun. And the chats that we had with some of our audience members afterwards were really positive, really rewarding. So we're happy that we're doing what we do. We love it. It gives us great satisfaction and a sense of achieving something. We're just two people that are sharing some of the ideas that we've found and hoping to help you guys to become more sustainable. I think overall, the theme with the film and the theme with a lot of the things that we talk about is that sort of sense of community. I think that's the key. I think we have to go back to being a part of a community and not kind of living our lives autonomously like robots. We're not robots, we're human beings. And the best part about being human is the relationships that we can cultivate. We can learn so much from one another. And so I really encourage you to take one action, and hopefully that action will relate to reaching out to your community, whether that's to us, to someone in your friends and family circle or network that you can kind of learn from or share with, or reaching out to broader community groups for advice, for offering your volunteering or assistance or your knowledge, and really kind of just slow down and let's talk to one another. Let's fix this problem together. That's it from us. We will be back in a fortnight to help you guys become a more sustainable you.
Sustainable You can be found on Instagram at Sustainable You Pod, on Facebook at Sustainable You Podcast, or you can email us at sustainableyoupod@gmail.com. Episodes are created and produced by Lisa and Jackie.